Welcome back, everyone, to the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. I am your host, Danny Duarte, joined by my co-host, Brian Acevedo. And we are in the middle of the second round, guys. All series, Western Conference and Eastern Conference series, are two games in. We're going into the third game tomorrow. For whatever reason, Cinco de Mayo Thursday, the NBA decided to give the players off, so props to them. And, you know, it's very interesting so far. We have great series going. Some series we're predicting are going to go seven games deep, just given how the rotations are and how the lineups are playing out. And a quick nugget to throw out for you guys is the fact that if the series goes seven games, similar to how it is right now, where like certain teams have a two-game gap in particular, so the Celtics and the Bucks and the Grizzlies and the Warriors have 2 days off and aren't going to be playing until Saturday. Well, if the series goes seven games, the Sixers and the Heat and the Mavs and the Suns would actually have 2 days off heading into not this weekend, but the next weekend. So it looks like the NBA is playing around with the days, just seeing how they can coordinate. I don't know the logic behind it, but it's just fun to throw that out there. But yeah, Brian, let's get right into it. First series we want to cover is probably the series that, in both of our opinions, requires the most attention. It's probably the most competitive so far, for lack of a better term. It is the Grizzlies and the Warriors. We want to kick it off with some updates that have come out recently. First being that Dylan Brooks from the Memphis Grizzlies is suspended for Game 3 on Saturday. He did have a flagrant true foul on Gary Payton the second, as he was going up for a dunk. He hit him across the head. He caused him to land awkwardly and ultimately fracture his elbow. He's going to be out for 5 weeks. Brian, how do you feel about this? Do you think it's fair? Do you think it's justified? I mean, he did injure a player, send them to the hospital, and the player's going to be sidelined for well over a month.
So I think the overwhelming majority, at least based off the poll that we had on Instagram and from what I've seen generally, is that it was a dirty play. Maybe it wasn't intentionally a dirty play, but regardless, it was. I do think that Gary Payton's landing is a big reason why so many people kind of got wind of it. Obviously, the knock to the head is never a good thing, but the landing, I think, was really what made the play to me stand out anyway. Ultimately, in this modern NBA, I'm not really surprised by the decision. Personally, I would rather just let him play. This has been a fun series. The last thing I want to see is a pivotal rotation player have to miss out, especially a game, you know, at Golden State. I think the Warriors are going to win regardless, to be honest. Even if Brooks was playing, I think they'd still win. That's kind of where I'm at with that.
Oh man, you and I are on different sides of the field on this one. I definitely think he should have been suspended. Ultimately, I don't think he was he had malintent. I don't think his intent was dirty, but ultimately the end result was that he did cause a player to go out for an extended period of time, and he should, you know, face a consequence. I think one game is fair. I wouldn't have been upset if he went out for two games. I mean, this is a very serious injury. Like, for all we know, Gary Payton is going to be out for the rest of the playoffs. It's a pretty critical blow for the Warriors, seeing how he was a defensive specialist to them, arguably their second best defender behind Draymond. So I don't hate the decision. I understand it, and I'm here for it. Ultimately, I do agree with you. The Warriors were probably going to win Game 3 regardless, and there's actually been Memphis fans that believe that with him being out, that's actually a blessing for the team, given how poorly he's been shooting from the field this series. So, you know, maybe Memphis actually gets a win out of that one ultimately.
Maybe it will, but I will tell you, they're going to need some more help from this supporting cast. I mean, we've all kind of seen Ja Morant, the 47 points in Game 2. Obviously, Jaren Jackson Jr. has been playing with good energy as well, but I need to see it from Desmond Bane. He looked a little shook up in Game 2. Obviously, the Grizzlies won despite that, but with no Dylan Brooks also, they're going to need a big game from Desmond Bane, I think, in Games 3 and 4 for them to have a chance to win one of the two games on the road, which they're going to need to get now.
Touching on a point that you made, I've been a little bit disappointed with Jaren Jackson Jr.'s overall playoff performance. I mean, he did have that great game where he shot the lights out. He had over 30 points. But for the most part, the man has been in foul trouble. He hasn't really had an impact on most series, most or on most games in either series, in my opinion. I would expect more from him, especially given the amount of years he's been in the league. I would have thought by now he would have his foul troubles behind him. But to your point, Desmond Bane has to be more of a factor given the fact that Ja Morant can't be the only scorer in this series. And now, after the refs blew that carry call in the final 2 minutes of the last game, they're going to keep an eye out on him. And we have seen the fact that, like, he does carry. I mean, for lack of a better term, like, he blatantly does it very aggressively. Like, everyone in the NBA carries, but his is a little bit more egregious than anyone else's. So I think that that's ultimately going to start playing a factor in how he is officiated down the stretch.
Yeah, that's a good call with the carrying. It's actually been something that they've started to notice and mention on some of the broadcasts. So it would not surprise me if the NBA pays a little bit closer attention to that. I know we haven't touched on him, Draymond Green. To me, he's been such an important piece of this series without really even playing. I mean, obviously the Warriors stole game one even without him in the second half. And then obviously he missed some time in game two. Let's see what they look like if they can get a full Draymond Green game. I think you add the home crowd for Golden State in these two games. I see it 3-1 going back to Memphis, and then maybe Memphis can force a game six. I think that's what we're looking at here, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. At this point, I think that the Warriors probably take both games, just given the home crowd momentum and also the fact that Memphis just hasn't seemed to be able to click it altogether in the crucial times. I think that six games is being generous. I could see it going six, but I have five personally.
Oof. I thought six was almost being disrespectful. I feel like there's a lot of people out there that think this is going to be a seven-game series. So we're going to have to see. But this has been very high-level competitive basketball. My question is, how is Memphis going to travel? I know they've been the two seed, obviously. They have the second best record in the league this season, but these are the playoffs and these are the Golden State Warriors. So you're going to have to now win on the road since you lost game one. That's my question with them. I don't know if they can do that.
I think their inexperience is ultimately going to weigh a little heavily on the outcome of this series. They don't have a lot of playoff experience. They barely scraped by a Timberwolves team that ultimately shot themselves in the foot way too many times. I think that if the Timberwolves, the coaching had been a little bit better and the players had a little bit more experience, they would have easily come out. I mean, that was just, they barely scraped by. The Warriors are not the same opponent. Again, five, but six latest for me.
Yeah. I'm just excited for Saturday because I think game three, much like game two and game one, I hope are really entertaining games.
Yeah, I think so as well. And we're going to touch base on the other game that's going to be played on Saturday. That is the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Boston Celtics. Milwaukee came out game one very dominant. We saw the Giannis effect. You know, they punched the Celtics in the mouth. They kind of stole home court from them. But Boston did their thing in game two, man. I mean, Jaylen Brown really stepped up in that first half, shooting the lights out. No Marcus Smart either, and they were still able to clamp down on the Bucks and Giannis ultimately. Brian, what are your thoughts as this series shifts back to Milwaukee? We still don't have Chris Middleton in the lineup, so ultimately the Bucks are down their second best player. But, I mean, one could argue that Jrue Holiday has, like, taken that step to being the Bucks' second best player, and they still have, in my opinion, the best player in the league right now. So I think that they probably take both games, but I could see the Celtics also stealing one.
So yeah, I could see the Celtics stealing one. I don't think it's likely. I really think this is where Milwaukee, much like Golden State, can kind of take hold of the series by winning two in a row. I know with the way these NBA playoffs have gone, this might be a 1-1 split, but to me, the combination of the Bucks' strength, size, and defense, I mean, this is not, again, the Brooklyn Nets. To me, game two was a must-win for Boston. I still feel like the Bucks are going to win this series ultimately, though. I actually think that Boston underestimated them a little bit going into game one, and to me, you cannot let the defending champions take game one on your home court. I mean, I know game two was good, but to me, it's just not a great way to start the series, and they kind of like the Grizzlies, they have to win a game on the road now to go ahead and advance, and that's going to be big. We're going to see, Dan. We're going to see. I think ultimately, though, Giannis is going to prove to be too much. He's the best player in the world for a reason. I do think Jrue Holiday has definitely stepped up with Middleton out. I think Brook Lopez and Bobby Portis have also stepped up as well. Even Grayson Allen, his shot is starting to fall. I mean, this is a deep team. This is a scary team. And we're going to see. But I would rather, if I'm a betting man, I'm betting on Milwaukee.
Can we just appreciate Giannis? I mean, he started that game terribly for game two, but when you look at his final box score and just the impact he had on the game,
incredible.
He with damn near a triple double, and that was an off night for him. I mean, like, what more can we expect from this man? It's just terrifying to see his impact on both ends of the floor and what it looks like when he has an off night.
He is a beast. And actually, some more good news for Milwaukee. Budenholzer was interviewed today, and they did say Middleton is out for games 3 and 4. But they said after game 4, he said, quote, we'll see. So that is definitely, I would say, a positive update. I mean, it sounds like some positive progress is being made. I'm not saying he's going to return for this series, but it doesn't sound like they internally Milwaukee has ruled him out for sure yet.
I think that's a great news for Milwaukee. What we do have to be cognizant of, guys, is I don't think that even though they want to like throw him into the fold and like just, you know, have him be out there as long as possible, contribute. He is coming back from kind of a close call with his injury, so don't expect him to play heavy minutes. Expect him to kind of be eased into it a little bit as he gets his knees under him.
Yep. And speaking of injuries, I mean, Boston is no stranger to that right now. Marcus Smart obviously missed game 2. They were able to win without him. I would argue, even though, you know, a lot of fans will say that Smart is the heart of the team and all that, but to me, they look a little better offensively without him on the floor sometimes. His shooting can kind of create some issues for them offensively in the half court. So who knows? Maybe he sits another game. Maybe that helps Boston again. But I do think on the road, they're probably going to want to pull to have him in the lineup if they can. And then obviously Jaylen Brown had a little bit of a hamstring scare in game 2. So these are going to be things to watch. Jaylen Brown, one of my biggest concerns with him. I love him when he's healthy. But and we talked about this kind of offline, Dan, he's missed a ton of time in the past for someone with such a young career. Jaylen Brown is going to need to be fully healthy for the Boston Celtics to beat the Bucks.
Yeah, no, I'm fully aligned. I mean, they need Jaylen Brown. He's clearly their second best player, and he has to have good nights in order to remain competitive. It's that simple.
Yeah, and we didn't even mention Tatum, who obviously, with that goes without saying, needs to be good every single night, I think, for Boston to win. I don't see them winning with him putting up 15 on the road.
Yeah, no, I'm completely aligned, brother. Let's quickly switch the scenery to the other Eastern Conference playoff series that's going on right now, the Miami Heat versus the 76ers. Brian, what are your thoughts on this series? I mean, it's been very disappointing that Joel Embiid hasn't been able to play. Right now, we got an update that it's looking unlikely that he's going to play game 3. I wouldn't expect him to play game 3. And also, guys, you have to think realistically. If he does play, how long is he going to play for? I mean, he suffered an orbital fracture, for God's sakes. He needs to wear a mask. He's got to be overprotective. I mean, I wouldn't throw him in the fray of these things, just given the severity of that injury and also the fact that he could barely look at bright lights up until a day ago. So I just think that all these factors are not playing in the 76ers' favors for him to play. And if he does play, his participation is going to be very limited. When we talk on the 76ers, it's just been disappointing from James Harden and pretty much every player that's not named Tobias Harris or Tyrese Maxey. Brian, if Joel Embiid doesn't come back in game 3 or 4, the Heat have a sweep, in my opinion. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I say your analysis of the series is pretty spot on, and I think it's how most feel. I mean, without Joel Embiid, this series definitely lacks that extra punch. That's the series we were all looking to see, and you know, even though Miami, they're going to handle their business as they have, even them, I can imagine, would probably prefer to win under better circumstances, but you can only control what you can control. When it comes to Philly, the thing that I'm really noticing, outside of obviously the main story of Embiid being out, is James Harden. It looks like James has definitely lost a little bit of a step as far as athleticism. He doesn't have that quick twitch that he used to have, where he used to be able to just beat the immediate defender. Miami is kind of shading a help defender, just kind of giving him a little bit more attention than he usually gets when Embiid is in the lineup, and it's making a big difference. He's not taking as many shots as he used to when he was with Brooklyn and Houston in the past, and he just looks like a completely different player. Does not look like a max player, for sure, Dan. Tyrese Maxey looks great. Tobias Harris is using his size, but as you touched on, the rest of these guys, Danny Green could not hit anything in games one or two. It was really ugly. Matisse Thybulle is really showing off, like, outside of defense, as you touched on, Dan, like, he just doesn't give you much, and it makes him kind of unplayable in certain situations. And then you got to give credit to Miami. Despite their home crowd not being the most enthusiastic, they're playing with a ton of energy. They're obviously very well coached. Their defense is, I would say, on par with the best in the league. They're beating an inferior opponent right now. Like, it is what it is. The Heat are clearly a better team. They have the luxury of Oladipo and Tyler Hero coming off the bench. I mean, PJ Tucker's given great minutes. They're a great team. They're definitely a great team, and they'll be in the conference finals most likely with the way things are looking, and it's going to be a fun one to see if they can play against the Bucks or Celtics.
Yeah, either way you spin it, this series is pretty much a wrap. I am concerned for how Philly's going to play this offseason. I would not give James Harden a supermax deal, just given how he's played the last couple months in Philadelphia. It definitely does look like he's ultimately, taking a step back, and they already have a max deal with Tobias and Joel. I just think that would be a mistake. I would rather invest that money into Maxey or some other players and give James Harden still a fair contract, but nothing of a superstar. But to your point on the Heat, man, I think there's a point that we're all forgetting. Kyle Lowry hasn't played this series. Kyle Lowry's been sitting out. I mean, let's wait and see how he comes back and when he comes back, because he could definitely make that Eastern Conference Finals an interesting round with more on-ball defense and discipline that he provides.
Yeah, no, he's obviously a veteran and a pro. I'm these hamstring issues, they concern me, because kind of like if it ends up lingering with Jaylen Brown, if Kyle Lowry is not even 100% at his age playing in some pretty high intense basketball games, it's a little bit of a cause for concern. But I mean, you have Gabe Vincent, who's gotten some great minutes throughout the season because Lowry's missed so much time, and he's really kind of filled in pretty well, honestly. I don't notice a huge difference when Lowry's in the game versus Gabe Vincent, Dan. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think you see it more on the defensive end, which, again, the stats don't, like, play in Lowry's favor, but the intensity's there. I mean, and I think that's just a credit to Miami as a whole and Gabe Vincent in particular, with the fact that, they bring the intensity and consistency every night, and Gabe Vincent does his best to just stay in front of his man and play the defense to the best of his ability and cover up his flaws there.
Yeah, I wish we could just fast forward to the conference finals or get to the point where Joel Embiid's going to play, because if it's going to be, Harden, Maxey, and Tobias, it's clearly not going to be enough against Miami.
Do you think that Doc Rivers should be let go if they don't make it past this first round?
I don't think you can, because you just literally took out Joel Embiid right before the second round started. How can we fairly judge him off that?
He is to blame for Joel Embiid playing, right?
Yeah, but I don't think you let a coach go for that. That's just my opinion. When you're so close to being a title team, and I don't think there's a better coach out there for this group, to be honest with you.
I can see both sides of the argument. My biggest concern with just Doc Rivers is his coaching has just been it's been paradoxical, in the sense of, like, he sees what's working and then just ultimately decides to stay, like, move away from that. He goes small. The Heat clearly have a problem guarding that. And, the Sixers go on a run and ultimately lead by halftime. And then third quarter starts, he goes big again. And, like, it just doesn't make any sense. That, and he's done that.
That is a great point.
In a row. That is inferior coaching, in my opinion.
That is a great point. I noticed it too, right? And it was – he used the same lineup right before halftime, and it just doesn't make sense. They make a run, and he doesn't go back to it till, like, too late in the fourth quarter. It just makes no sense.
And at that point, I don't know. I want to cut Doc some slack, but he's being really outcoached in this series by his own fault. he's shown that they have the pieces to stay competitive, but his own like stubbornness or like lack of knowledge, I don't know what it could be, it just seems to be getting in his way almost.
Yeah, I think he's a little stubborn. And that is definitely creating a little bit of a problem as far as the rotation. But I think ultimately the real issue, I mean, I know Hibbs' coaching decision to leave Embiid in the game is a factor, but I think Embiid not playing is a bigger reason for why Philly has not won than Doc's rotational decision. That's just me.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, I think unless you see a coach in the market that like you just love and want to have, you stick with them for another year at least.
Yeah. You want a D'Antoni Harden reunion in Philly. That's only
We never know. I mean, Daryl Morey. But
he is interviewing, by the way, D'Antoni for Charlotte.
Oh my god. That would be fun.
That would be Carmelo.
I mean, but then that team's definitely not gonna play any defense.
No, yeah, yeah. They'll never win a championship with D'Antoni.
This is a fantasy podcast, guys. So if D'Antoni gets hired, take anyone from Charlotte.
Absolutely. Like, no question. Jalen McDay, all these guys.
But guys, we're going to transition into the last series, the last Western Conference series, which is the Phoenix Suns versus the Dallas Mavericks. Phoenix has taken a commanding 2-0 lead against Dallas. A couple of things that I've noticed, Brian, is that Phoenix just has a really great, well-rounded team. I mean, everyone seems to be stepping up. Chris Paul, he was showing a little bit of his age the first round with just having up and down games. He's been consistent this entire series since last game, game six in the Pelican series. He's just been balling, in my opinion. And regardless of how Luka Doncic has played, I'm concerned of two things. One, that his team is just not good enough he doesn't have a second guy. His team's not good enough for him to make it past the second round. But two, can his style of play ultimately lead him to a championship? I'm starting to have my questions around that.
I think he does need to modify his style of play just a little bit, but I also don't think, to touch on your first point, that they don't have the right pieces yet to get to that championship. He's still really young. There's so much time for Luka to get there. I know people are impatient, but let's remember, you know, this is a young player in the league. He's got plenty of time. I will say though, you know, Jalen Brunson, he has really struggled with Phoenix's size. Spencer Dinwiddie really hasn't given you much. Reggie Bullock was pretty contained in game one. He had a better game two. Like, the surrounding pieces are just not kind of giving you that same production. And I think a big reason why is because of the competition they're going up against. I mean, Phoenix, guys, was a top five offense and a top five defense this year in the NBA. That does not happen often. Those are the elite of the elite teams. I think we need to give them a ton of credit for what they've been able to do. And I mean, their game plan is working perfectly. It's let Luka do whatever he wants to do, and we're going to limit everybody around him because Luka's not going to beat them on his own. He's a 23-year-old savant, obviously, but it's not going to be good enough against the Phoenix Suns team that is just absolutely loaded. I actually thought of a comparison, Dan. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. I know the teams are not exactly the same, but this feels kind of similar to LeBron against the Spurs in the finals. That's kind of what this series kind of feels like. Maybe the surrounding pieces are a little bit better for Luka than LeBron had back then, but that's kind of the vibes I'm getting.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I will say one thing about that team, though. Bron did carry, or he didn't carry, I think that's the wrong word, but because of his influence on his team, he had a couple of all-star teammates because of that. Like,
yeah, Zagrinus, Ilgauskas.
And I think Mo Williams was also
Williams. An all-star. Was it that year? Yeah, it might have been that year.
I can't remember, but like LeBron ultimately, I think he just helped incorporate and get like the most out of his players a little bit more than Luka did. But to your point, I mean, Luka's still very young. I think that he's going to have to acknowledge there are some tweaks he needs to make in order to advance. But I mean, the hard times are ultimately what leads you to be a champion and a competitor. So he's just going through it right now, man. But I think we should touch on Phoenix a little bit more. Brian, Chris Paul, he's giving you everything he's got. I mean, this to me is his year to take it. I know we said that last year, but you know, with Milwaukee kind of at less than ideal strength, probably going into the finals and possibly even the Heat coming out of the East, you know, I think that it's ultimately Phoenix's championship to lose at this point with how strong everyone is performing.
I agree. They are the favorites. They've been the favorites. They had a little scare, obviously, with Devin Booker. But as long as they are fully healthy, they should be the favorites moving forward. I think it was funny. I was actually listening to NBA radio, and they were ranking the playoff teams left as far as who has the best chance to win the title. I would have Suns number one. I would probably have the Bucks at two. Then I'd probably have the Warriors at three. Then probably Celtics at four, and then the Heat at five. I mean, technically, I guess the Heat would have a better chance by default than the Celtics if the Bucks end up winning, but that's kind of where I see it.
The disrespect. All right. Well,
they've had the easiest path. I mean, look, I feel like I gave the Heat an adequate amount of respect, but I also have to consider the context of the teams that they've beaten. I mean, it is what it is.
Do you give the Heat less credit than the Celtics for their sweep or more? Or, well, their win or more?
I mean, no, I think the Celtics beat a better team. I think the Nets are better than the Hawks. I think that was a tougher first-round matchup, despite the sweep.
Okay. No, I was just curious. Yeah.
By the way, Mo Williams, I looked it up, was actually an All-Star in 2009. So not that year with the Cavs.
Okay. Thank you for looking it up. I remember he was an All-Star. I just couldn't remember.
It was in 09. It was later on in Bron's career. But despite that, I still get the Luka LeBron comparison. That's the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. If you had to compare him to a player of this era, this generation, it's easily Bron. Brian, I don't know if you want to end the episode right now or if you quickly want to touch on just some of the other breaking news we've seen in the NBA. You know, Ben Simmons, back surgery, out for 3 to 4 months. Like, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Brooklyn, I want to find out why did we not know about this Ben Simmons back issue before we made this trade to give up James Harden for him. I think that's my biggest question mark if I'm Brooklyn. Obviously, he's going to miss all summer, and they say he's going to be ready for training camp. But, I mean, we saw how it went this year. So that's going to be this is going to obviously be a big subject in the summer based on his recovery and his rehab and how everything handles with his mental health. But I don't know, man. I'm starting to get concerns about long-term Ben Simmons for sure.
I mean, back surgery at, what is he, 25?
Yeah, scary. Scary stuff.
That's tricky, and the fact that like we don't know what kind of back surgery he got. Like we knew what exactly had happened with MPJ. Like we know nothing about this, which is even more alarming. Like the fact that it's been way, way too quiet and hush hush in my opinion.
Yeah, makes you feel like Daryl Morey knew this information and kind of withheld it.
We'll see, man. I mean, how the hell did he get injured? There's just so many questions, but I don't think he withheld it. I think it's more so the Nets didn't do their due diligence. I mean, they have a medical staff that ultimately has to clear the trade. You know, the trade could have been voided. So there's definitely a couple of factors there. And the last topic I quickly want to touch on, you just posted it on our Instagram, Robert Covington staying with the Clippers, team-friendly deal out of the wazoo, in my opinion. 2 years, $24 million. What are your thoughts? I think that this Clippers team, once Kawhi and PG come back healthy, oh my God.
Yeah, as far as that goes, I think the Clippers are just setting themselves up really nicely to make a run over the next year to 2 years. They obviously have two championship caliber players as their one and two, and you kind of build perfectly with them to have like a 3-and-D type of player who's proven that he can guard the elite wings in the league. You tack on the defensive production that he gives you during the regular season. I mean, this to me is a no-brainer for the Clippers and good for Rocco, man. That's a solid deal for him.
Man got paid. All right. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode, guys. Just a quick preview for the upcoming episodes. As the series start to wind down, Brian and I are going to start incorporating more NBA talk. There's only so much playoff action we can cover two times a week as it continues. So we're going to do probably one episode a week of playoff action and playoff coverage, and the other episode a week on just regular NBA discussion and NBA speculation, i.e. Phil Jackson, what the hell is he going to do with the Lakers? So just more to come on that front, but we just wanted to keep you guys in the loop there. And yeah, that about does it for us. Brian, any parting words for the audience?
No, sir. Just hope for a good week, good weekend of games here, and hopefully we get some game sevens next week.
All right. Well, Let's hope it's not the Heat versus the Sixers. But until next time, guys, we hope you have a great weekend. Make sure to interact with us on social. You know, we love the interaction and just the engagement from you guys. And have a great one.